Welcome. Hola. Bienvenidos. Bonjour et bienvenue to the Social Network Show. Welcome to the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. We give you actionable information to make your social networking the best it can be for business to business, business to consumer, and for folks who just like to post. And now, broadcasting from the studios of the Hank Greenspoon School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico, and Dr. Jane Kawaski.
Thank you for joining us today on the Social Network Show. I'm Dr. J, your host, along with Jim Nico, Chief Instigator of Social Network Intermedia, LLC. Today, you are going to be hearing from Indianapolis businesswoman and entrepreneur Jenny Vance, founder of the social network Plan Soon. Then, we'll hear from journalist extraordinaire Nina Burley about the social media aspects of the Amanda Knox trials in Italy. Our show is brought to you in part by Nevada Sun Dental. You've heard of medical tourism? Well, why not plan some dental tourism to fabulous Las Vegas? Please listen to Dr. Moe's ad later in the show. Jenny Vance, our first guest, is one of the leading women entrepreneurs in Indianapolis. She's the founder of Lead Gen, that's LEADJEN, a lead generation company, which she has grown to nearly 100 employees, serving hundreds of companies across the United States, ranging from startups to Fortune 500. She's also co-founder of Jasubi, a customer relations management software solution. Now, Jenny has been an active member of several organizations, the Sales Lead Management Association, which has honored her three times among the 50 most influential persons, and 20 Women to Watch. She's active in Entrepreneurs Organization, American Association of Inside Sales Professionals, the National Association of Women Business Owners, and she's a frequent speaker and author. Since you're listening to the Social Network Show, of great interest to you will be the fact that in 2012, Jenny founded Plan Soon, a social network that helps people try new things and meet new people. Plan Soon was selected as one of the three companies to be featured in the inaugural 8-week Venture Camp Tech Accelerator Program. Jenny, welcome to the Social Network Show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Looking forward to what you have to say about the social network that you founded, and welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, Jenny, we're really pleased to have you with us today. And could you tell us about the process you've been going through with Plan Soon, from inception and planning, implementation, so forth, and the part played by Venture Camp?
Sure. I'm going to try not to have too long of a story for you.
That's okay. Just pause once in a while.
It's been a long road, and I think the inception of the idea for me, I definitely have had the idea for a while, and not, you know, there are a few activities that I love to do. I love to ballroom dance, and I love to golf. And, you know, it's actually interesting how difficult it is to find other people who share and enjoy those same activities. Mm-hmm. And when it really hit home for me, I was actually traveling out to California and for business, and my flight was canceled, and so I was stuck in California overnight on a Friday evening, which isn't that terrible. And I decided, hey, you know, I'm just going to try to go find a salsa club somewhere to go dancing, and I started looking up on different websites. I used Meetup and tried to look for any meetups that were social dancing, none that were taking place that evening in San Francisco at the time. And then I also tried just searching online, and I found a place online that said they were the best salsa club in California, or the best salsa in California. I was like, well, that's where I need to go. I showed up, and it was a Mexican restaurant that served really good salsa.
Oh, dear.
Yes, and that was kind of eye-opening to me that there's a gap here. There's a real gap in between these different social solutions that are available for use today. I mean, clearly there are solutions that help us know our friends, the people we already know, and know them more often, and those solutions like Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter help us do that. And mm-hmm. most of the people we add are people we're acquainted with in some way. My challenge is that I know the people that I'm acquainted with, and I know what they like to do, and it's not always the same thing I like to do. And so I was really trying to find a way to meet other people who enjoy some of the same things I do without it having to be about a date. And so a lot of those other sites are dating sites that connect you with other people, or a meetup, which is very group-based. And when you want to do something as an individual with another individual, that site kind of breaks down. And so I just felt like there was a gap in the middle of all that, and started down the path of building out a solution in May of 2012 to address that need. And invested in that personally because it is an idea that I'm very passionate about. And built the technology, created the mobile presence, and had the opportunity to participate in Venture Camp. It was something that was being filmed here in Indianapolis, which is where I'm from, and just thought that it was a really interesting possibility. It's a startup of startups. I knew that it was the inaugural season going into it, and I just thought this could be a really good venue to gain some additional presence for this concept and for Plan Soon now that we were nearly done with the product.
Well, you do enjoy adventures, obviously.
Yes.
And it's great to apply that to your business life as well. So it sounds to me like Plan Soon is definitely a impromptu, spur-of-the-moment type of activity oriented. And that was what isn't out there yet, so you saw somewhere you could create a new product that would be really needed.
Absolutely, and I would say the other side of that, in addition to being more immediate and more spur of the moment, more spontaneous, is also help the fact that it was connecting people based on activities and interests instead of on relationship status.
Mm-hmm. That I think is very welcome, and it also I think ties in very well with what psychology has shown, that for a group or even a dyad, any number of people, to have a meaningful relationship, it really helps to have a task that they share. Mm-hmm. And so, rather than a work task, you're looking at recreational activities. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, go ahead and tell us about the Venture Camp, because that looks like it's 8 weeks residential. Did I understand that right from the website?
Yeah, their goal in Venture Camp, when I learned about it, was to bring together entrepreneurs that all had ideas and treat it kind of like a tech accelerator, but in a shortened time cycle, and to actually film it as a documentary-style production to understand the plight of these young entrepreneurs who are trying to take an idea to market.
Is that recording? Now, it sort of uses some of the ideas from a reality TV show, but it sounds like it was minus the drama of the created, the manufactured drama.
I will say manufactured drama, yes.
Real drama, there was plenty of it.
I think in reality TV, there's a dose of it that clearly is not reality, and there's a lot more production happening to create stories. You know, you throw a bunch of type A entrepreneurs into a room together for very long, and you got a lot of strong wills, and you're going to have some drama that comes from that just organically. What I really appreciated about the process, because I signed up as a business person, I did not sign up to become the next reality TV star or anything.
Right.
I really wanted to grow this business and gain some knowledge, and I had that purpose all along, and I felt like they were very true to that perspective of a documentary that, and the producers actually talked with us about that and said, we might stop and ask you to repeat something, but we're not going to tell you what to say. We're not going to tell you what to do. We're not going to instigate interactions. And I think, I feel very strongly that they held true to that.
Mm-hmm. And is that part of the purpose, of course, was to make that whole experience available somewhat to other people who aren't able to actually be in the venture camp. Is that right. Is that something? Is the footage available still online, or is it sort of during the season and then it's over?
Yeah, so the footage hasn't been released yet for public consumption, and this whole world is a little new to me, and I'm not one of the decision makers for Venture Camp as a participant, but I know that the content that we created is fairly evergreen content, and they're in the midst of finalizing the edits and working to get that out to the right venues. So I think that's kind of what I've learned from it, kind of a long process, even when you're not a startup, even for new shows that are being produced, by very large entities. It takes time to put all the content together and build the story within and make that in a way that viewers can relate to. So okay. I know that's a big part of what they're working on right now.
Well, in our next segment, we're going to go into a little bit more detail on that and what you came away from Venture Camp with for your new social network plan soon.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
What could make you eager for a trip to the dentist? Well, what if it meant a trip to Las Vegas? With USC training and 18 years of experience, your Las Vegas dentist is expert in fillings, root canals, crowns, veneers, implants, and clear braces. Dr. Naheed Mohammadi's office is easy to get to from the Las Vegas Strip. Dr. Mo strives for long-lasting solutions with quality materials and superb workmanship. Find her online at NevadaSunDental.com. To schedule, just dial your country's exit code. Often 00, then 1-702-898-0800. Whether you speak English, Spanish, or Farsi, you'll feel right at home, and of course, locals are welcome. 702-898-0800.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Welcome back to the Social Network, and we are in the midst of our conversation with Jenny Vance from Indianapolis, and we're talking about her development of Plan Soon, a new social network designed to help connect people with others on the spur of the moment and soon about activities they both enjoy. And it is, surprise, not a dating site. So, Jenny, whereabouts are you right now in the process? Is it still, you might say, in beta mode, or what's going on with Plan Soon?
Yeah, I would say we have live product, and our product is live. People can go to Plan Soon. They can sign up. They can use it, and we also are available on both Google Play and then also Apple stores to be able to use mobily. So it really is out there. It's available, and people are using it. And people are signing up. What we are learning through that, though, I mean, I think for any company, you continue to you listen to clients initially. You put out what you want clients to use and to address that need, and then you listen again. And I think we're just at the end of that next mode where we've been listening and watching the behaviors of people in the application, and we're noticing a couple things that we're really excited to continue to evolve and change with Plan Soon and where we see a lot of opportunity. One major thing that we've learned through the process is that a lot of people come to PlanSoon and they treat it more like an Airbnb, where they know that there's something that they love and enjoy, and they don't care when they're going to go do it. The when of when that's going to happen isn't as important to them as it is to find other people who enjoy those same things and are at a similar type of skill level. So some of the changes that we're excited to make in 2014 to the application and in early 2014 is to, right now, you know, while it's interest-based, it's still somewhat event-based and based on a little bit of, like, dates and times. Whereas with Airbnb, when you have available space in your house or you want to put your house up as, you know, a possible venue, you put it up and you kind of, you have your schedule of availability in there, but it's more about the location and the venue, the number of rooms, the other preferences you have for house guests and all of those things. And I think we're finding the same thing with PlanSoon, that when someone wants to find a dance partner, they are less concerned about when they're going to go dancing, which I face that too. I want to just find more people who enjoy what I do, and we'll figure out a time to go based on what works for both of us. And I'm more concerned with dancing with someone who is at a similar skill level,
mm-hmm.
you know, and enjoys some of the same dance styles that I enjoy.
Right.
And, you know, maybe likes to practice or go to the same types of places. And so that's one of the things that we've observed with the feedback that we've received with customers when we've asked for their insights, that, you know, making it a little bit more, even more activity-based, and really allowing someone to almost create their, you know, personal ad for their activity and area of interest, and then trying to just facilitate that they can work out schedules when they find a person that they have a lot in common with.
Like finding a bed and breakfast that is in the right place and something you like, and then you'll book the date.
Exactly.
I noticed one of the participants was saying, like you, that the skill level, he liked to golf, but he liked to golf, you know, straight through and not be taking a lackadaisical or very methodical approach, and so he was looking for golf partners that also like to play fast through the
yep.
links.
Yes, absolutely, and I feel the same way. You know, you go out on a golf course, and even if you play with someone that has a similar handicap, if they take three practice swings for every shot, you know, at some point, someone who's not used to maybe takes one practice swing and is used to playing in well under 4 hours for their round, playing with someone who plays in 5.5 hours is pretty frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
So just those little things make a big difference in how you connect with someone. So, yes, we have a shared interest in the activity, but how we execute against that interest is also really key. So part of what we're really excited about is finding some of those people that are very passionate about their interest area and working with them to help build out the criteria and mm-hmm. configure, you know, almost like different pages and streams is what we were calling them, different streams that you could follow based on your interest areas and have the configuration about the activity and how you measure experience levels. You know, in golf, it's a handicap. In tennis, I think, you know, I'm not as familiar with tennis, but I know that it's like a 3.5 versus a 4 versus a 5 in terms of the skill level
uh-huh.
And number of years that you've played. And so we want to make sure to incorporate all of those things so that we can create those streams and help people connect in a way that's relevant for their activity, too.
Well, you might know that through the Social Network Association that we are interested in what social network proprietors can suggest to remedy some of the problems and using user input, like you're expressing, to fine-tune your program. We're hoping to do the same thing with the social network standards and best practices. And so I'm wondering, how have concerns about privacy and safety influenced this construction of your site?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have definitely taken into account ways to get people and encourage people to really build out their profile. And we've focused a lot on leveraging existing profiles. People have already invested in their profiles in Facebook, in LinkedIn, in Twitter, in Instagram, Pinterest. there's information out there, and a lot of that information can be quite validating. And while it's still possible for someone to create a fictitious persona through all those venues where there aren't inconsistencies, it's pretty rare. Mm-hmm. And so being able to really leverage those technologies into our site and helping allow people to also feel a comfort level with another person that they're going to go do something fun with. And do that because there is a lot more information out there to allow someone to understand more about a person's background. And that's a big part of where we're trying to facilitate that. Whereas if you think about it in comparison to a Craigslist, there's very little information or connection on there. So when you're even buying concert tickets and showing up in a parking lot, you're a little at risk, and you have to be really smart about that. I think in general, you know, and when we put the site together, we knew that there were some policies and things that we needed to make sure our users were aware of and when using the site, to be safe and be cautious and to be conscientious, but also to provide our users with as much information as possible about their peers so that their comfort level is reached a little faster.
So what you started began with in terms of someone's profile being on a variety of sites. So are you saying that if I find someone that's also interested in an activity, that I can go to their profile on these various sites and just see what the sum total is, mm-hmm. if it all sounds legit?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what we encourage. There are a lot of sites that use a login through Facebook feature just to basically ease the use of login credentials. And that has some value, but we're trying to take that a little bit further to actually pull that data into the profile so that someone can go and look at some information about that person, pull in their Twitter feed, because, you know, seeing what someone's talking about on a daily basis can be helpful in knowing a little bit more about whether you want to spend time with that person.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what we're also finding is that when it's something that someone is really passionate about doing, the thing that they're more interested in generally is, does this person have like the skill level in some of the other aspects of the activity? And then they're pretty passionate about wanting to communicate with that person and then make the determination about whether they want to actually get together and meet that person and take advantage of that activity.
Mm-hmm.
Jenny, congratulations on all your awards and being this brilliant entrepreneur and for taking the care to get the feedback from your potential clients, et cetera, and for making it a social network, trying to make it as safe as possible. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
And what is your contact information that you want our listeners to go to in terms of a website and also on Twitter, please?
Sure, absolutely. Our website is plansoon, it's plansoon.com. So I'd highly recommend that and signing up and then create that Airbnb-esque, you know, plan out there of something that you enjoy and want to go do and find other people that match that interest. And also please let us know through the site. There are plenty of ways to touch base and connect with us and the feedback on our site that's present on every single page. Please let us know if you're interested in helping develop out an activity area of one of the interest areas that you're passionate about, to configure that in a way that we can really help match people that are in the right skill level and experience to make it a positive connection when we're facilitating that through our site. Our Twitter handle for Plan Soon is fairly easy. It's just at Plan Soon, PlanSoon. So we'd welcome your following there on our Plan Soon page, and then my personal Twitter account. And I would love to stay in touch with the folks from your show. My personal account is at Jenny Vance Indy, and that's JENNY, V as in Victor, ANCE. And INDY.
Okay, thank you so much. And again, a social network to keep your eye on. Join up. And Jenny Vance, thank you so much for coming on the show. You were brilliant.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Want to be a guest on the Social Network Show? Email us at guest@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat. I'm stupid. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. The only thing I didn't learn in school today is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Welcome to the Social Network Show, and we are speaking now with Nina Burley, a journalist who is calling us from Manhattan, and we're talking with her about some of the social media aspects of the Amanda Knox trial. And Nina, what is happening now? It seems like it's hitting the news again.
Well, it looks like the retrial of Amanda Knox over in Italy is reaching a conclusion at the end of the month of January. And at that point, we'll know whether this second panel that the Italian Supreme Court sent the case to in Florence judges that there was enough evidence to find Amanda Knox and Raffaele Sollecito guilty.
It seems like from what she said in her email that she sent to the court that Amanda Knox seems to be a master of the ill-advised remark.
That is well said. Oh, my goodness. I wish I'd thought of that when I was writing my book. Yes. She has a tin ear, what used to be called a tin ear, right?
Right.
About how she's perceived.
Exactly. She just seems to be incapable of perceiving the social nuances or interpretations, which really makes me wonder if she isn't somewhere on the autism spectrum, you know, perhaps an Asperger. Mm-hmm. And I really think that is a big part. You know, everyone has talked about, and you've especially gone into in your book, The Fatal Gift of Beauty, that there's always this disjunction between culturally, you know, what the young American going overseas into a traditional European culture will come up against. But this seems to be far beyond that, in that it just is...
Yes, she kept digging herself deeper and deeper into the briar patch with the way she talked and acted. There was a point where you could see a typical American kid doing some of the same things. Mm-hmm. And then there was a point where it went sort of beyond that, where you started to, where it was just so tone deaf that you started to wonder, and people started to wonder, well, what's wrong with her? And then I think that fed into the whole sort of story that the prosecutor had presented about what happened, which was that this, you know, this beautiful face, this beautiful young woman really masked a kind of a psychopath or, you know, a secret female Charlie Manson or something. And so people started to see these sort of behavioral mishaps or these tone-deaf statements and ways of communicating as a sign that there was this sort of, like, pod person on the inside, that there was this ugly, strange person. And you know, I think to some extent, it is related to maybe she does have something going on. I don't know. I never took her letters to I did take them to a psychiatrist and had somebody look at them for me. And I note that person never said, this looks like the writing of an Asperger. But there is something, there's a tone deafness to her, and it's just, you know, her family and friends would say, well, that's just Amanda. That's mm-hmm. just how she presents herself. They don't regard it as a pathology. They just say that's her personality.
Well, and by Asperger's, I mean that there's an autism spectrum, a continuum.
Right, and right. I've heard of that.
It mm-hmm. really is just a matter of, you know, how tuned in are we to other people's feelings
right.
and thoughts? How well do we know how others will respond to what we say. And
right.
that seems to be a big problem. But what I'm curious about now is to learn from you how the social media, things that have gone out on Twitter,
mm-hmm.
and there seems to be, you know, some large contingents, you might say, who are
mm-hmm.
either convinced she's guilty or convinced she isn't. And
mm-hmm.
tell us about that.
Okay. Well, I'm going to venture out on a limb here and say that this case might be to social media and to the internet what the OJ case was to 24-hour news cycles. In other words, it is this seminal moment in sort of the annals of, you know, media, and, mm-hmm. and in this case, a crime story, in which there's just a kind of exponential, you know, growth in kind of what the effect of that media is on the case and vice versa. And so to explain, after the murder was discovered and after the prosecutor made his statement in front mm-hmm. of, you know, arrested Amanda Knox and Rafael A. Fletcher 5 days after the crime occurred on Halloween, the night after Halloween, and then we're talking about the murder of Meredith Kircher. People always leave her name out, and that's one of the things that the social media were operating on the side of the Meredith Kircher victim side, say, is always overlooked. Halloween night, after Halloween, this young woman was found stabbed to death in her apartment, her house, and Amanda Knox was his roommate. Amanda Knox was on the scene when the police arrived with her boyfriend. And Amanda Knox, after 4 days of questioning, gave a signed statement saying that she thought she might have been in the house with someone who apparently was not there, a black man, and then was herself accused of murder. And three people were arrested. A third, the black man that she had named was taken out of the case when it was clear that he had an alibi. And the police discovered that a third man, who they hadn't known about, his fingerprints and DNA were all over the bloody room. And in fact, he has never denied being in the room when Meredith Kircher died. His name is Rudy Gaudet. So they arrested him and threw out the other guy. So you had three people in jail. Within 5 days of the murder, you saw websites being created that were, you know, one was called Perugia. I think it's called Perugia Shock, and basically just feeding into the internet stream all of the records and material that were coming out of the prosecution office. Then two other sites were created, and I interviewed the people who started them. One's called True Justice for Meredith Kircher, which was started by this British guy, British national who lives in New Jersey, and who claimed to have connections to the Kircher family when I first met with him, but I don't know if he does, or it's never been made clear. But in any case, he was one. And then this other, this woman in Seattle named Peggy Ganong, who independently of this British guy here, came to the conclusion sometime in the weeks after the case became public that Amanda Knox was a murderer, and started, I mean, of course, she had been accused of murder, so she started this website, and she lived near the Knox family. And she started a website, again, downloading a lot of material from the Italians, translating the public records. Then they became involved in the sort of the media scene because they were producing all of this sort of original legal material, because the lawyers in Italy were feeding them material. And to understand how this is happening, one thing you need to know is that the Italian system is not like the American legal system, and that there's no public face. So here, if there's a crime, the reporters will go and call somebody up in the public information office of a court, and they will give you the records that you're allowed to see. Over there, there's nobody like that. What they do is reporters become cozy with certain lawyers, and then the lawyers will hand them whatever they want. So this case had, you know, all the CSI video was published, down to the most horrific video of them, you know, inspecting this girl's naked body. I mean, it was obscene. And all of this stuff was thrown out onto the internet. And these two main websites, Perugia Murder File, True Justice for Meredith Kircher, became these, like, hives of people who were obsessed with the CSI of the case. They're like armchair CSI, and also obsessed with Amanda Knox's guilt. They're like the pitchfork and lantern bearing mob in the Frankenstein movie. And they were, and there's an enormous number of them. And anyone who questioned the prosecution's version of events, as I eventually did and others, we were immediately pounced upon on the internet and on Twitter, on Facebook. You can see it. You put my name, you can see they would put up things like, Nina Burley's obviously on the payroll of the Knox family. And that was been repeated over and over again, and it's a very slanderous thing to say. But there was, you know, there's no point in sort of, other than disputing it to them once, there's no point in sort of continuing to argue with them because they're obsessed with the case.
They're just like the cyber mob.
And I think there's a psychological aspect to this that people should study, because I've never seen anything like it. It's sort of like, it was like Troll Central, and none of them would put their names on their comments. And it's just gone on and on. And years in, you know, I don't know if they are if they are stirring the pot, if the prosecution's, you know, sort of desire to keep this going, or if the prosecution is stirring that pot. But in any case, they worked in league with each other, whether actually or just simply de facto, to push this notion that, you know, Amanda Knox is the guilty person here. Rafaele Silicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicicic blood footprints, and footprints are in the blood. His DNA is in the vite, whose DNA and fingerprints are on the wall, and who took the plea deal
and who,
naming Amanda Knox.
Well, after that, you mean Goide, is that how you pronounce it? The guy from
Rudy Goide, yes.
Goide from Côte d'Ivoire. So
yes.
What I wonder is how much influence, it's sort of like trial by public opinion, only public opinion now, aided and abetted with the internet, is just off the chart. But how much influence did that have on the actual court proceedings? You know, was everybody involved
right.
in the court tuned in? Did they all have their eye on what was going on online and what these various websites were saying?
Right. That's a very good question, and I think that I can answer it by saying, inside the courtroom at the trial level, which is the one that I was present for,
mm-hmm.
they're all Italian speakers.
Right.
Some of them don't speak English at all, read English. I don't think that they were affected by the things that were being said on the internet. That said, they were very keen to and paying close attention to the way the case was being covered on television
mm-hmm.
in the United States. They were paying attention to that because they could sort of keep track of it, and they knew that there were millions and millions of people who were being influenced by these stories where they would repeatedly try to get Amanda Knox's mother on the morning shows crying and talking about how innocent her daughter was and so on. And so they would, to respond to that, they started to say, there's a big PR juggernaut in America, and, you know, the Knox family must have all this money. And, you know, so the story sort of grew in Italy that the Knox family is like this rich family, and that Amanda Knox is a rich kid,
mm-hmm.
and that the money that the Knox family put money into a gigantic PR effort to persuade Americans that she was innocent. And the fact is they're a lower middle class family, living, you know, basically one or two steps up from trailer houses,
mm-hmm.
in a community that hasn't got sidewalks, on the edge of Seattle. It's not Bill Gates Seattle. It's poor people Seattle. They're not rich. And the reason that the media was so obsessed with it is the reason that they're obsessed with Jodi Arias' case. And this is the stuff I address in my book, which is these are archetypal issues that people respond to. The woman, the girl, the friendly girl next door face that turns into the monster. It's an archetype. It has to do with female power and female violence, and, you know, mother's not supposed to be, you know, mother's supposed to be, female's supposed to be feminine and gentle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It all has to do with that. And that was why the television networks couldn't get enough of it, because viewers couldn't get enough of it. They were like, and, you know, what was that girl? Who was she? And, mm-hmm. of course, anybody who started to look at it up close, well, I'll back off. The television networks were not, NBC, ABC, and CBS, and CNN were not in lockstep with her being as such. I mean, some of them thought that she was guilty, the reporters and, mm-hmm. and the press. But they were very concerned about getting Amanda's mother, who they always wanted to get on television, because it makes good TV to have the crying mother on television, and then to get the ultimate interview with Amanda Knox when she was to come out of jail.
Well, yeah, and you do a fantastic job in your book, The Fatal Gift of Beauty, to discuss the cultural prejudices, you might say, or biases of the Italian prosecutor and so forth, just the importance of the Madonna and the various, you know, the dichotomous view of womanhood, etc. But most interesting, too, is that they were translating everything she wrote almost obsessively. I won't qualify that, but she did as obsessive. But let's just say she wrote voluminously while she was in prison, all of which went to the court in translations that may or may not have been accurate. But it's just a fascinating story, and it is something that we can concern, you know, really consider the part that social media and online activity really does play in court and trials these days. And I really like your comparison of it with O.J. Simpson and the 24-hour news cycle and so forth. So thank you so much. I'm afraid we have to stop for now, but there's so much more that we could talk about on this. We've been talking with Nina Burley, the author of The Fatal Gift of Beauty, The Trials of Amanda Knox, and we will continue watching this and especially listening to what you have to say about it.
Thank you.
Thank you
for having me.
Thank you so much, Nina.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media, coming to you from the studios of the Hank Greenspan School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on The Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests, and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.